Today's strongman guest is the one and only Dr. Sean Baker. He's a lifelong multi-sport elite level athlete and a surgeon who served as a combat trauma specialist in orthopedics while deployed to Afghanistan with the United States Air Force. His focus in recent years has been on using nutrition as a tool for health, performance, and overall well-being. Through his carnivore training system and private consulting work, he has inspired countless thousands of others to challenge a highly flawed nutritional paradigm and to opt for a carnivorous lifestyle instead. And he's also Big Papa Bear. Enjoy.
You know, I think as a man, I mean, one of your jobs is to be physically robust and vigorous. I mean, I think that should be a main priority. And I know, I mean, I'm not saying you're going to be bodybuilders and spend their life in gym, but I think you should have enough respect for yourself and anyone that's around you that you take care of that aspect of it. And it starts with diet, it starts with exercise, it starts with, you know, good habits. You're going to be more productive. You're going to be able to provide better for yourself. And then if you're looking after that family, provide for the family, I think that's, you know, like I said, I get there's a lot of families where there's two providers and some families where the mother is a provider, the mom's a provider. But at the same time, I think as a man, you want to feel useful and you want to be useful. And, you know, I think we are, you know, I guess evolving to a place where a lot of men are not that.
Welcome to the Strong Man Podcast with Dr. Rimka, one mom's quest to support her son through his rites of passage and becoming what I hope is a man of courage, resilience, and compassion in a world seemingly gone mad.
Let's chat. Let's get started.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, you know, podcast than maybe what you typically do. And so I'm hoping, you know, to kind of share a different side of Sean Baker, more the boy that became the man, and also the man that is the dad.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's ultimately a podcast kind of, I guess, for parents. And not surprisingly, a lot of moms really like it. That seems to be, and they share it a lot with mothers of girls, which isn't what I kind of intended. I'm thinking it's to help women raise boys into being strong men. Yeah. But a lot of women, the feedback I get also is, no, girls need to be listening to this because they're picking horrible guys. Like, you're picking these weak, you know. I'm like, oh, that's a really interesting take. And so a lot of moms have said, no, it's been really refreshing to kind of show my teenage daughters the kind of men, that kind of man I hope she marries, you know, sort of thing. So it's pretty interesting. So it kind of just all started, Sean, because I was writing a health book for my son. And so it turned into like a men's health book. And as I was writing it 17 chapters in, I'm like, this is not really what I'm trying to go for. I really just want a guidebook for my son, coming from a mother who happens to be a brain-based doc, and my take on, please, no matter what, if I drop dead tomorrow, don't become a vegan. Don't, you know what I mean? That was like, these are the messages I wanted to say, like, let's talk about some of these things with gender. Let me just give you my inner thoughts in case I don't make it and you need something coming from me and my heart and that kind of thing. So, and then it kind of turned into, why don't I just start asking the men, you know, that I know. And I started even with patients because I would know their stories. And these were phenomenal men. And I would know they dealt with severe social anxiety or rage or violence in their teen years. And they're these stoic, powerful, incredible men now. So I'm like, how did you get like this? Tell me how this happened, you know? And it always inspired me, gave me hope for the little kids in my office, right? With ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder or bipolar or something. And I'm like, just because you have this today doesn't mean this is your destiny. Because I had all these guys to kind of, you know, you don't have to end up in prison. You don't have to end up a drug addict. And my personal family is riddled with that. So that's a very heavy fear that hangs over my head at times. If I see kind of errant behavior in a boy, right? Like typical kind of stuff that teens should be doing. So I'm asking all the men that I think, wow, they've got something that I wish my son grows up to be like. And, you know, we're both kind of outspoken in terms of what we're seeing in the climate, in terms of whether it's food, politics, whatever. What has happened to Oh, I don't know. I never thought I'd be this person that would say this. I'm like, I feel like everyone's attacking my son because he's a boy. I'm actually not comfortable with the fact that you're making judgments that he's going to be a man. Like, I'm okay with masculinity. Like, I don't understand why we need to act like he doesn't have balls that he's going to scratch one day. Right. Like, I found myself at 10 years old for him going, oh God, I don't need, you know what I mean? Like, he needs to be safe to be a man in this world, actually, which as a woman was a really strange thought for me to have, because I didn't think, you know, men needed protection. But man, it's a very different landscape right now, Sean. So kind of asking, like, I'm asking you guys, how did you get the way you are? Where did the character come from? What lessons do you have? What do you wish your mama would have did? And if you have any type of advice for single moms, because there's so many of us out here that either the husband is gone for some reason, or we divorced him. Like, maybe there's a guy around, but we think they're weak, or there isn't one. What are the mamas supposed to do to help these boys really come into themselves as men?
Yeah, that's a big long topic, obviously. And you know, yeah. I wonder a little bit. I'm trying to think back. You know, I'm thinking, like, what was I like when I was 20 and 15? And yeah, I mean, there's some stupid shithead stuff I used to do as a kid, and probably, you know, in retrospect, you know, I think, what would I tell myself? And then I would think to myself, would I even listen? You know, that's the thing. I probably wouldn't listen, you know, because you know, when you're young, you kind of you assume, you know, you've got the experience that you do, and a lot of the things you find are not what you've been told or thought they are. But I think, you know, when it comes to when you talk about boys are different than girls, I mean, it's kind of popular now to say that there's no difference, and or the differences don't matter, but they really do. I think they really do, and I think, you know, when you think about what do boys need that girls may not need, and I think there clearly are some differences. I think some of the physicality is important. I mean, so, you know, I always find that, you know, like, little boys, they're terrors. I mean, they run around and bouncing over the walls, they're trying to keep killing themselves. But not all the kids, but the girls tend to be a little more, you know, relaxed in many cases, not all. But I mean, there's this general requirement for physicality, which I think is important. And we get that through playing, play fighting, wrestling, sports. I mean, those things are, I think they're vital. And, you know, it's a shame that we've taken PE out of the education system, largely in the US. I mean, I think most schools don't offer it anymore, which is an absolute tragedy. I mean, I think obviously, you know, while it's, you know, I get that we can all do it with whatever we want to do, but I think there are some certain, you know, again, I like you, I don't think masculinity is bad. I mean, there are bad men and there are good men. And I think there's nothing wrong with being a man who, you know, is a traditionally masculine male. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And part of that has to do with physicality. Some of it has to do with your mental outlook on things. And, you know, I mean, a certain amount of stoicism. I know we sort of demonize that, you know, because there's, again, the stereotypical man is, you know, quiet with his emotions. They tend to be sort of inward, whereas, you know, women tend to be more communicative. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. I mean, I know that's me. I mean, I tend to take my problems on myself and don't cry to everybody else about them and deal with it in the way I deal with it. And a lot of times it's through just, you know, outworking it or sort of finding some kind of healthy outlet. And I found so much, you know, I think of all the sort of the negative times I've gone through in my life, and we'll all face that. There'll be loved ones that, you know, die or breakups or tragic, sad events, you know, illnesses that we all have to get through. I mean, that's part of life. You know, what's going to happen to you or somebody you love, you're going to have to deal with it. And having a, you know, a way to deal with that, like when I got divorced, you know, I've got three little kids, and all of a sudden I go from seeing these kids every day to not being able to see them every day, which is, that was the worst part of the whole thing. It still has to be the day that I see my kids on a daily basis. And I had fortunately, some healthy outlets, and most of them were exercise. I mean, I didn't take it out in the bar. A lot of people turn to drugs and alcohol as a way to numb the pain. I wasn't numbed it, but I'm jumping rope. Sitting there, thousands and thousands of jump ropes and just kind of numbing some of that pain. But I mean, you got to deal with that. As you know, I think nutrition is important. Well, one thing I've always criticized, and I think, right or wrong, that, physicality and not appreciating that and saying, oh, it's okay to be weak, it's okay to be obese. I think those things are problematic, not just from a physical standpoint, but I think it affects our mental health in a very strong way. I know when, I can only speak from my own experience, but when I'm walking around and I'm injured and physically not at my best, I don't feel good mentally. I mean, and I'm more likely to be angry and anxious and not able to deal with things. So I think taking care of that, I think as a man, one of your jobs is to be physically robust and vigorous. I mean, I think that should be a main priority. I'm not saying you're going to be bodybuilders and spend my life in gym, but I think you should have enough respect for yourself and anyone that's around you that you take care of that aspect of it. And it starts with diet, it starts with exercise, it starts with good habits. You're going to be more productive, you're going to be able to provide better for yourself, and then if you're looking at that family, provide for the family. I think that's like I said, I get there's a lot of families where there's two providers, and some families where the mother is a provider, the mom's a provider. But at the same time, I think as a man, you want to feel useful and you want to be useful. And I think we are, I guess, evolving to a place where a lot of men are not that. They become useless, for lack of a better word. I mean, they're not very good at things. They're playing video games all day and eating garbage and I don't know. It's a strange time. When I go around and I look at, you go out and you see young men these days, 20-year-olds, teenagers, and it's not inspiring in a lot of ways. You see people that are already on the way to a lifetime of illness and disease. And that's just poor mental health, which is we're gonna see with that. And when you have all this a society of people who are physically weak and physically sick, and then also, having mental health issues, you got big problems that are there. And we start to grow and grow and grow, and we start to see what I think we're seeing, some of this devolution of our society, where it's just all this fighting and constant stress and anxiety. It's not a nice place to be. I mean, I am generally a pretty happy person. I'm generally just chilled out. I'm not super flighty, but I'm generally in a good mood. And I think that's kind of my baseline, how we should be. And part of that has to do with good nutrition, good exercise habits. And I know the last couple of years, particularly with the pandemic and some of the response we've had, and I think both of you both agree that a lot of the wrong things were being done and pushed, was very stressful. And I found myself, not particularly happy at times. And I think that's part of it. Part of it is a tough time. I would say that, these kids today, depending upon who's raising them and where they're being raised and what's being shown and taught to them, have a really, they've got a difficult task ahead of them, to sort through all this. When I was a, 12-year-old boy, I was caring about what gender I was and, all this sort of stuff that's out there. I mean, I just wanted to play it. That's how I went around, throw the football around and stuff like that. And I don't think the kids today, they're unfortunately being forced to deal with things that they're probably, not capable of dealing with yet, or don't quite have the experience. And I think for single moms, if they're all possible, and I understand why you may not want to be in a relationship, but it's always nice to have a male figure around, I think, to sort of help, I mean, as much as you want to, and there's some really, really wonderful single moms are doing a great job, but as hard as you try, you can't be a man. I mean, outside of you identify or pretend to be whatever you thought, but you, I think that's an important thing for a little boy to have that in the role. And a good, and there's bad examples. And when you think about what you consider to be a good man versus what somebody else might consider, there may be different things. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. My my sort of thought of what makes a good man versus what someone else might think, like a female might think, maybe two different things. You know, like I said, I use like my youngest son is in jiu-jitsu, he goes with me, and the coach, my coach Greg, is a great guy, a friend of mine. He's a hard ass. I mean, he's like no nonsense. You know, he's a 14 tour army, ex-army ranger, special forces, special operations guy rather, police officer, quit because he didn't like the BS. And when the kids are in there and they're like start crying in class or get beat, this is not part of the deal. And I love that. That's like, yes, but my significant other might not like that. She might think that, oh, well, the kids are being, they need to be coddled more. You know, I don't know. I don't think that's, I think boys in particular can do well with some level of, suck it up. Because life is sometimes tough. And, if you can handle the little things, and I think, some kid, twisting on your arm, making you cry, and you just is a little thing, in my view. Then you'll be able to handle these bigger, more difficult things. And, my life has been a series of, I've been very fortunate. I've been able to do some learning things, but I mean, it's not that I haven't run into difficult things that I've had to do. And, making these little habits of doing challenging things. We always seek out comfort. And it's very easy as a parent to want to give your kid a comfortable existence. And my kids guarantee had it a lot easier than I did. We all feel that way. When I was a kid, they'd walk both ways uphill in snow, and we always really joke with grandparents or whatever. But I mean, honestly, there's a point where, you're like, what do I want to teach my kid? I can provide for them, I can give them, nice clothes and good food and, safety and protection and some nice gadgets and toys. But at the end of the day, what skills do you want to impart on your kids? And I think, teaching them about nutrition, teaching them about health, and then teach them how to overcome challenging situations and encouraging them to deal with them is important. It's not always, helicopter momming and guarding them from everything, and I, with my significant other, we sometimes battle a little bit over this thing, but she doesn't want him to he was cleaning my truck, I give him $20 and he cleans my truck, and he left the vacuum cleaner outside, and it was late, and we've got a bear walking around, by our yard, it's not going to go there, and she's like, oh my God, go out there and make sure the bear doesn't get it. I'm like, no. Yeah, it's just one of those situations where, you think, how much protection does your children need, does your child need? I don't know how old your guys are. You said 12 or something like that.
He's 16 now. So, yeah.
He's pretty much a man. Well, maybe not quite, but he's getting there for sure.
Yeah, he's in that age where, you have to start letting them make those big mistakes at times. It's that line for a mother. I'm sure fathers go through this too, but again, I'm more of a natural nurturer, right? I'm more of a natural protector in that way. And very emotionally and kind of psychically connected to him. And I know he's got to start doing these dumb things. I'm like, oh, right. This is where we're at. He's got to start stretching manhood, and the prefrontal cortex isn't really there, but the desire to do this stuff, that's why that age group, as an orthopedic surgeon, I don't know exactly, but that's that 15 to 22 year, wow, they get in a lot of accidents. A lot of things go on there because they take a lot of risks.
Yeah.
They don't make good decisions.
Yeah, you do. And that's what, and you do dumb stuff for sure. I can remember some really, really stupid stuff I did. I just think about how I'm still alive and some of these things. But yeah, there's some of that. And I think you can kind of, they're going to find it one way or the other. And whether they do super stupid stuff or only mildly stupid stuff, I think you can kind of direct that. And I think that's, like I said, getting these kids involved in things like martial arts. They get that outlet where they're beating on each other. You can do that. You can get that. There's a lot of it. You do these things because it's exciting. It's thrilling. Some people are daredevils. They want to drive your car 150 miles an hour or all these things, which obviously have a significant downside if something goes wrong. Whereas I get the same rush out of, the physical stuff of martial arts. It's the same level of adrenaline, but the downside negativity is much less. Maybe I'll break a finger or something like that, but it's not where, you can go through this life-altering paraplegic or something like that. So it's, like I said, you can't protect them from everything, but you can sort of, guide the sort of recklessness toward the potential damage is less, you know, so they can still experience that. So I don't know, like I said, I don't know if he's into sports or any of those types of things. You know, like I said, I think it's interesting. If you go to, I was in Dubai back in April, and I found out that all kids in the Dubai public school system all are required to do martial arts, and that they all have to do jiu-jitsu as part of their curriculum. It's like a little bit of a requirement, which I think would be something that would be really neat to do in this country. And of course, trying to get that fast would be challenging. But I think that's something that I think would be one way to do that. There's hunting, outdoor stuff. You're in the city of Atlanta, but I mean, not far from you is quite a bit of rural country, and so there's different things to get out there. And so I think, there's, like I said, there's opportunities to satisfy that stupidity urge, if that's a better
term. Yeah. That's like dopamine seeking, right? Exploring.
Sure. So there are ways to figure that out without doing things that are potentially life-threatening or negatively life-altering, and to find out what to do with that.
I want to pause you, Sean, because I really think this is something you said that everybody has said. And to me, when I was writing this book, it was something like, seven key principles, for men to, strong, healthy, it was all about selling a book to men. And I've changed the whole deal. Like, let's not talk about six pack abs and rock hard cocks, basically. And I want to focus really more about my son and how to help other women like me. Because I would see so many of my patients bringing their boys to me with ADHD, anxiety, autism, behavioral issues, whatever. They're stealing the credit cards and all kinds of whatever. And I'm like, these are great kids, but there's something going on. And like you said, absolutely, mental health issues, it's all brain-based. And we know inflammatory conditions and toxins and sometimes lack of just outlet, right? Like leaving a puppy Rottweiler at home and it's going to destroy everything because you weren't a good parent and exercising that dog the way it needed to be. And a lot of women are terrified of the physical aspect of this. Like when I signed my son up for boxing at, 10 or something, 11, I got a lot of kickback. Aren't you afraid of a concussion? Because they know I deal with traumatic brain injuries and concussions and all this. I do this all day long. They come like, am I afraid of a concussion? No, because like you said, it's boxing, it's controlled, they're wearing gloves, they have headgear, it's in an environment that's structured. And, there's going to be risks with everything. I really find women, it's interesting. I guess because I played a lot of sports, and so maybe I just know a little bit more, I like a risk, I like physicality a lot more than I think a lot of women sometimes who just, my sister hates sweating. Because I just hate that. I just find that the oddest thing ever. I'm like, you what? But, she likes to knit. And I would never knit. So somebody's got to do it, right? That I would have these conversations with these women like, no. He doesn't need yoga. He needs to punch and kick things and like fight. Like, and it's being ripped out. PE is one thing. But I mean, at the schools here in Atlanta, my son's been to very high-end private schools, never a public school in his life. But there's no two-hand touch football because that's too aggressive. You can't play tag because somebody might get pushed down on the ground. You can't climb on top of the equipment because they might get hurt. I mean, it's very bizarre. And even sometimes Foursquare is too competitive. So the kids, if they win, they're not allowed to play anymore. That has actually happened. And I just go, what? So it's a bigger problem, right? So I would love you to maybe talk about that and what you've seen in terms of your life and kids today, your own kids, whether there's any patient stories, because it's the biggest thing I think women need to really hear, please.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, just some misconceptions. You talk about, these kids falling off the playground and breaking a bone. Well, the nice thing about kids breaking a bone is they're designed to do that pretty well. They're designed to heal that incredibly well. This is the time kids are supposed to be learning about, spatial awareness and how their body moves and what its limits are. And sometimes they're going to push that. And the nice thing is, if a kid breaks his forearm, literally you can stick their bones together at a 90 degree angle if they're young enough, and they'll straighten themselves out. They're amazing. They're like little salamanders, like almost grow back new limbs just about. I mean, you know, so it's quite amazing. So kids are designed to be roughhousing and playing and pushing their bodies. And, you know, I think for particularly strength training, I had my kids starting strength training at 4 years of age. And that's, you know, that's appropriate. You know, a lot of people are like, well, wait till their growth plates close or they reach puberty. And that's total garbage. There's no reason to wait. Kids should be starting out getting stronger from a young age. Doesn't mean they're in their deadlifting, but teach them the basics of how to jump, how to move, you know, throwing, play catch with medicine balls, with a 4 pound medicine ball. My kids would throw around and just learn how to catch and receive and throw and you know, receive some stress. And my, you know, my one daughter is a state champion track and field athlete now because she started that very, very quickly. You'll have a better trajectory on that. But as far as, you know, like you mentioned, boxing, yeah, I think those things where you are allowing these kids, like, you know, like Tiger cubs. I mean, they're playing. It's what they do. They learn how to play with physicality, hunting, and emulating that. And this is what, you know, I think the male species has done. Is it's hardwired into our DNA that we are supposed to be out there more or less hunting. And, you know, that's very physical, and wrestling around and fighting and those types of things. That's who we are as a species. And to try to beat that out or protect us from that often results in, you know, disconnect on who we are and what we are able to experience. And I think that's where you get a lot of these people seeking, well, I don't feel right in my own skin, and therefore I'm going to try drugs, or I'm going to pretend I'm some other, I'm a rabbit or whatever, I'm, you know, I'm a different sex or something like that. So I think this is a bit controversial these days, but I think some of that is what's driving that. And maybe for some there's something else beyond that, but I think a lot of people are just, they're just not able to experience, you know, we're like domesticated human beings now. We're very much out, you know, we're going to sit here in climate control rooms where, you know, 20,000 years ago, we wouldn't be. We'd be outside dealing with the elements, dealing with everything else. So I think the more you can allow for that to happen, you know, even like when I was a kid, you know, it was like, and I get it, you know, in the inner city, it's not safe. There's drugs and weirdos and crazy people. But, you know, when I was a kid, it was like, you know, summertime now, it was breakfast out. And I came home when the street light came on, it got dark. And that was my, you know, that was what I did. And I ran around all day long and got up to, you know, climbed in the houses that were being constructed and ran around and explored and, you know, played with other kids and sometimes fought. And that was what I think I needed. And I think we kind of need some of that. And, you know, it's even some of the sports these days have become so, like you mentioned, they take the competitiveness out of that. And I think it's, you know, it's better to learn to be not a sore loser and to be a gracious winner than to not think that anything matters, or it's just the participation, because winning does matter. And I think there's a, you know, like striving to be better than you were. I mean, if there's no point in winning, then why even try? Why would you even want to better yourself? Because there's no tangible reward, and we're all kind of reward seeking. We all have reward seeking behavior, and I think that's part of it. And I very much like to win. I'm very competitive. You know, I like to stack myself against the best people in the world and say, why can't I beat that person? And it kind of internally motivates me. You know, it's always nice to have, an opponent, you know, and sometimes that opponent becomes yourself. And it's like trying to get better than you were yesterday, which is also, can be good, but it can also be bad because you can sort of, you know, you don't like yourself. That becomes a problem. But yeah, I think that, you know, as far as, you know, like clinically what I would see, I mean, I cannot, you know, I saw a lot of kids with injuries that were not because of the activities they were doing. It was because of really how poor their health and diet was. I mean, you know, we see kids like, you know, when I started my orthopedic surgical residency, it was very rare to run into a pediatric patient with an ACL injury because it was not common. Now it's very common. And some people will say, well, kids are doing more sports, and that's clearly not true. Kids are clearly less active than they used to be. I mean, as a whole. And I would see, routinely what I would see is some kid that started a sport but was woefully inadequately prepared from a physical standpoint. They had a really poor strength to weight ratio. They were kind of obese, and they didn't have much muscle. And then the ligaments were given, and they had this horrible diet and, you know, processed garbage, and that just causes you know, I think it's causing structural problems, you know, structural weaknesses within the tissues and the thermoids. And so, you know, I think one of the things, again, obviously my focus is a lot on nutrition. And I think a lot of parents want to placate their kids with good tasting junk food. You know, it's you know, I'm going to give you a well, here's a cookie, or here's a piece of cake. And the kids expect to get a piece of cake after every single meal, and their breakfast is made out of, you know, some sort of dessert, you know, pancakes with syrup or waffles or some sugary syrup, cereal. And we just have this sort of, you know, I don't know, this mindset that kids have to always be, you know, getting everything they want all the time. And that's not, as we both know, that's not how life is, right?
Right.
Life is the challenge of that.
Well, let's just hit on this nutrition thing, because you are, you know, an author around nutrition. You're very famous in what we would call the carnivore community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 3 years ago, Sean, when I was writing this book and my rough draft, which I haven't published, I'm like, I think I want to change it. I think I want to get a little bit, what I was saying to my son at 12 years old, I'm like, it's not quite the same. I've learned new things. I'm a little bit stronger. The most controversial thing I was going to put in the book then, so this is like 4 years ago, was I'm going to come out real strong on carnivore. Okay. Cause I was carnivore then, and I was going to be real strong about never become a vegetarian, never become a vegan. And I'm outlining all the science, why, how it makes you physically weak, mentally weak, you know, spiritually weak even. And like, this is not the way to take care of yourself and the people you need to protect and defend. And I, similar to you, I've had those conversations with my son, but like, yeah, you know, like it or not, you are not me and I am not you. We are not the same. You can try to, they want to, this whole boys and girls are the same and men and women, we are not. And I have no problem saying that. Back then, the years ago, I said, well, I'm going to stay away from this conversation because it's too controversial, right? Now, here we are 4 years later or so, and we've seen lots of the last couple of years with this mysterious invisible thing in the air that we're supposed to wear masks for all the time. And, you know, all of life's supposed to be altered. And it has, right? There's been a lot of trauma on people. There's been, and children in particular, there's been some very interesting things that have gone on. But hands down, without a doubt, I still stand very strong on the way to have to create a strong, stable human. And I think men in particular really need this maybe more, but I'm without a doubt, this goes across the board for girls, boys, men, and women. I'm very animal-based, primal diet, meat and fats, and you know, this should be the primary thing of the diet, and going through very clearly will outline how taking that away will weaken every aspect of your body, your mind, and your character. I look back, I was a vegan for 12 years. I look back at some of the choices I've made back at that time and what happened to my body. I'm like, oh, right. That's when I broke L5. That's when I heard any of that. That's when I broke those two ribs. That's when I just, like, how am I not putting all this together? That's when I made that choice. And, you know, did that marriage and did that whole thing. Like, I blame vegan for all of it. That's where I'm at, you know. I'm like, my poor cholesterol was like 125. Everybody thought this was good, you know, and it was not. So let's talk about, you've said it, let's talk about the meat versus the cereal versus the waffles and what kids are eating today. Because although you and I, we're roughly the same age, right? You know, I was born early 70s. You're right at the end of the 60s, right? So we're at 49, 53. You're like 53, 54, something like that?
55.
Okay. So I'm 49, right? So we're still very similar. I don't know. My mom, I was raised kind of like the four basic food groups. We always had a ton of meat. She, you know, but there was some fruit and vegetables, potato, you know, she cooked all the time. You know, fast food was a weird oddity of some weird moment of maybe a McDonald's Happy Meal, but it was certainly not an every week thing. And it was certainly not, well, this is normal dinner. You know, this is not. And now that's served in schools. I mean, McDonald's has, that's the lunch. It's McDonald's or Taco Bell or Chick-fil-A or something of that nature, which blows my mind that this is what's allowed to happen. So let's talk about that and what parents can do, what they need to be understanding about how this is setting up, you know, their children. I think it plays an outrageous role in mental health and what I can do with someone with diet alone. They want all these fancy therapies for me. And I'm like, we might not need a 5,000 neural feedback 3 months round. Let's start eating more meat and watch what happens.
Today's episode is brought to you by my favorite peptide company, Integrative Peptides. This is what I've been using primarily for myself and all my patients for several years. I'm good friends with Dr. Kent Holtorf, who's found a revolutionary way to bring peptides in an absolute capsule and nasal form that definitely is bioavailable, is tested to the highest standard, and is created and designed by real functional medical experts. Email us for the best price. Sure, you can go online, but I'm going to give it to you $5 a bottle cheaper plus free shipping at a bare minimum. Email me at desk@drrimka.com. That is desk@drrimka.com. drrimka.com. Believe it or not, I'm the only one in the world.
So I want you to talk about this a little bit, what you know about this.
Yeah, well, that's obviously my wheelhouse, and I spent a lot of time in this. And I can say that with pretty clear, I think fairly objective, I see a lot of people that dramatically improve their health by adopting a mostly meat or whole food meat based diet to sort of, you know, piggyback off the vegan whole food plant based diet. I see that every day, and I think, you know, I mean, I just think that that's who we are. I mean, we mentioned, you know, this need to hunt and roughhouse, and that goes in with why we do those things. And you know, we think about, you know, high quality protein. That's what we need for our strength. That's how we have muscle. I mean, you have muscle, we need high quality protein and strong bones and organs and thick skin, which is like elastic skin, and then the fat is you know, helps with our brain development. And there's so many compounds now that we see in meat that have clear benefits to our mental function, you know, things like carnitine and creatine and carnosine and taurine and answering, you know, on and on that we only get from these products, and they have a significant role in our mental health, and not to mention things like zinc and iron. Those things are very difficult or challenging to get a complete amount on a vegan diet. So it's impossible, it's much harder. And I think when you exclude meat from your diet, you are basically handicapping yourself. And I think these parents that raise these kids vegan, you know, they may say, well, my kid is fine, but are you knocking 5 IQ points off? They'll never be able to know. I mean, it's hard to say, but are you knocking 2 inches off their eventual height of the attempt? And there's pretty good data that indicates that, you know, these vegan children are smaller, they have cognitive delay in many cases, depending upon which study you've read. So I think that when we focus, like the biggest problem we run into today in this country is going to be obesity with kids. You know, I mean, with obesity comes, obesity is malnutrition as far as I'm concerned. It's not, you know, it's not the same thing as a starving kid you might see in sub-Saharan Africa or somewhere else where we classically see these, you know, these kids with this kwashiorkor, with these big bloated bellies from protein malnutrition. But obesity is malnutrition. And when you're malnourished and you're obese, guess what else is malnourished? Your brain is malnourished. And those things combine, and you end up just, you know, like I tell parents that your kid is not going to love you anymore when they're 20 years old because now they have anxiety, depression, and if they're diabetic. That's you know, they feel good about giving them, they're cooking their favorite pie or the cookie and feeding this to them on a very frequent basis. You know, birthday cake, you know, that's when you're supposed to have cake on your birthday, right? And if you're having it 3 times a week, or, you know, if you're turning it into half your meals, there's a real problem there. And I think the nice thing about putting meat up front at the beginning of the meal. I don't make my kids on the carnivore diet. They eat a lot of meat. And the nice thing about that, like when I cook for them, I've got, you know, 4 kids to feed. And, you know, it used to be, and this was years ago, literally I would spend an entire Saturday doling out food because they were constantly asking for hunger. And one kid's not hungry and this kid's hungry, and you're always like, okay. And here's like, so I figured out that if I just set them down for a big breakfast, and I just literally force feed them right here. Here's some bacon, here's some eggs, and sometimes it'd be steak, sometimes it'd be the dairy product type thing. And they would just eat and eat, and I would just keep eating. And then they're done, you know, hear from the rest of the day. You know, and this is a sort of magic parenting hack, you know, so you don't have to sit there and constantly preparing the food. You know, you fill them up, and it's just like, you know, I eat 2 meals a day because I'm literally full and I'm not hungry. Meat is very, it provides both a sense of satiety, which is that long-term capacity to not eat. So you load up on a big old steak or steak and eggs, or you know, something similar to that for your kids. They're not going to be hungry for 6 to 8 hours. That's really an advantage for the parent for sure. And then providing enough satiation to where they get enough to where they're full at the meal, not like anymore. You know, a lot of people running that problem is I have to have something sweet, I have to have something else on top of that. So I think by loading up on those types of food, high quality protein, fat, which is important too. I mean, you shouldn't be afraid of fat. You know, again, if you're eating to a point where you're getting fat, then you're eating too much. I mean, that's, I mean, it sounds pretty simplistic, but it's true. And I think most people that eat, you know, kind of a primarily meat-based diet, because the satiety is so profound, and they learn that, you know, like for instance, when I was a kid, maybe the same when you were a kid, I would come home from school, it would be, you know, 3:30, whatever time I walk home from school, and I get home, hey, Mom, I'm hungry. And Mom would say, well, dinner's in 2 hours. You're just going to have to wait. Right. And I did. And I didn't die. And I was hungry. And I ate all my food at the meal. And I think this is whereas today you fast forward and, oh, well, here you go, honey. Here's a granola bar. Yeah. Right. And so
now my mom's line was have a glass of milk.
Right. Or something.
Like that's that. What we had. We always had we had tons of milk. We drank gallons of it. Right. And we'll have a glass of milk because dinner is in 2 hours.
Right. But you contrast that to today. And it's like, you know, well, here's some junk food. And then it comes to dinner time when you've got nourishing, nutritious food on the table. And the kid sits there and, you know, picks a few of it and doesn't eat half of it. But it's an argument about not even not finishing the food. And so, I mean, there's just some simple things to do. I mean, some simple rules. I mean, particularly, you know, it always pains me, you know, or I just scratch my head when people say, well, I can't get my toddler to eat whatever. And I'm like, you're literally telling me your three-year-old is dictating nutritional policy for the house because he wants his cheddar bunnies or whatever it was, you know, that garbage. And I'm like, no.
Sean, I feel this. I go, what? I feel that's all he'll eat. I go, I guarantee you that child will not starve themselves.
Right, exactly.
Why do you keep giving them goldfish?
Yep.
That's who's in charge. I don't understand.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I can see where it's tough because, I mean, you see these multi-generational obese children from moms and even grandmas at this point. We're now about 3 generations into this obesity crisis. And, you know, when they're born, I mean, as a fetus, they're sitting there marinating in excess glucose and come out and, you know, they can't breastfeed. They're given some formula which has soybean oil, corn oil, you know, some really kind of gross stuff. And then they're immediately put on the rice cereal and, you know, these little chewy fruit things. And you just start them out on that path. And so you kind of made them sugar addicts or, you know, you just made them insulin resistant or, you know, sort of this sort of physiology, which is not really normal. So you start this, you know, when they're, you know, for those that are young moms, this is, you got to start this stuff early. And just kind of, you know, your kids should, and yeah, you're going to fight when they go to a party and stuff like that. But when my kids go to a little birthday party, you know, I'm not out there saying, oh, you can't have a cupcake. You know, I'm like, you know, hey, kid, just realize what you're, and this is the other thing, teach your kids. As soon as they're old enough to understand this stuff, and I think that starts around maybe 5 or 6 years of age, they should be able to, as they're starting to learn how to read, they're starting to understand the concepts of why we eat. You know, why is that not good for me? You know, well, I know it tastes good, but why shouldn't you eat a lot of it? You know, and have those conversations with your kids. And you'll find out that a lot of times later on, they make pretty good choices because they've been, you know, they've been told, you know, and sometimes you have to sort of, you know, hey, look at that person. You see why that person's really sick looking. Well, guess what they're eating? You know, like, show them what they put in their grocery bag. Take them to the grocery store with you and say, you know, why do you think this person is like they are? And I don't know. But, you know, it's like one of those things is no person is useless. Some people could serve as a bad example. And you can say, well, this is, you know, and you know, if you imprint that on your kids early on, it can often make a difference. And I, like I said, my kid will go to a party and he'll order an ice cream cone or something like that, and he won't eat it up. You know, as I was a kid, I eat the whole thing. I was better than I was. I mean, when I was a kid, I was sneaking up at night eating frosting. You know, you have cans, the whole thing, cream cheese frosting. That thing's delicious to me. But I mean, look at what was in it. Oh my God, it's like the most horrible combination of food you could possibly eat. You know, and figure stuff out for later in life. Like I said, there's a lot of dumb things I did, which I, you know, I think, you know, I would have not done differently had I known better. But, you know, I think
kids are supposed to do dumb stuff, though. I mean, I really remind everybody sometimes, like, oh, they did this. I go, yeah. I go, you didn't do that when you were that age? Yeah. Well, I'm like, and I'll have to use myself. I'm like, I did stuff like that. They go, you did? I'm like, yes. Like, you, I think sometimes parents want to live in like delusional land of, because I remember doing all kinds of things. I'm like, you don't remember when you tried alcohol for the first time? You don't remember when you lied to the teacher to do? We did those things. I mean, yeah. People did it. I mean, you guys, come on. You know what I mean? So there are certain things, and I've had that conversation with my son. Something happened once, his dad did something. I said, well, I did the same thing. I said, I'm not saying it's good.
Right.
But am I supposed to have some big overreaction? I understand. And so I just had to tell my son, X, I know what you did. I went through the whole thing. And I said, well, honey, I did the same thing. He's like, you did? I said, yes. That's why dumb choices happen at these ages. And we're here to help guide you. And I'm here to help remind you of who you are. And who you are is not that. But you had a moment in time. I did the same thing. I did some things and look back and say, yeah, I kind of wish I didn't do that. That wasn't my best self, you know, and move on from it, right? And use it like that lesson. But I kind of like what you just said there about using people as an example of, you know, in a kind way, like, well, this is what you can, you know what I mean? Like, what do you want to be like? What do you want to look like? What do you want to perform like, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you need to, you know, just say there are consequences to actions. And, you know, I mean, the more you act a certain way, the more likely these consequences are going to be. I mean, yep. Like, you know, same thing when I was, I can't remember when I started trying alcohol, I think it was like 14 or something like that. And the stupid stuff, I remember I came home late drunk as a, I don't know, 16-year-old kid or something, like maybe 17, I can't remember. My dad, you know, put me to bed, and next morning at like 6 a.m. said, okay, let's go move on. But you know, it's just like, you know, I might feel like absolute garbage, but I'm out there sweating in some Texas heat, you know, 95 degrees and 100% humidity. I'm out there, and you know, he, like I said, he didn't go off the wall on that stuff, but he just said, look, this, if you're gonna play, you gotta, you know, if you're gonna play, you gotta pay. And you kind of say, look, you know, there are real world consequences to some of this stuff. And then of course, you know, obviously those types of things can go very horribly bad very quickly. It's like, you know, if you're going to drink, you know, we don't want a car involved in this stuff, et cetera, sort of stuff. And, you know, there's ways to sort of manage them. I think technology has helped a little bit with GPS your kids.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like I said, you've got to, you know, there's a point where you give them the tools, and that's important that you have to give them the tools. You know, you teach them that there are some, you know, certainly negative things out there that you can't make them avoid it. They're not going to live in a bubble. Same thing with food. I mean, it's not like I tell people, hey, if you go on this diet tomorrow, all the junk food is going to disappear from the world. You're still going to have to navigate the world, and there's still going to be good smelling things and tasty things and parties, and grandma's going to come over and cook a bake a cake for you. And, you know, you're still going to have to deal with those things. So yeah, all these things are important. But I think, like I said, if you, just toughen them up. I mean, you know, even some of the goofy stuff that we're doing now, like I know you're doing the cold plunges, I think, stuff, and I've seen you. That stuff, you know, it teaches you, as much as there's a physiologic benefit from that, but there's also that mental, because, you know, that first 5 seconds when you jump into a cold plunge, like, man, this sucks. And you always have that period of apprehension because you know it's going to suck.
Yeah. It's really the 30 minutes or an hour before for me. I'm like,
okay, well, whatever.
This really sucks. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever. And it's funny. I think women more so than men.
Don't we do.
I see very few women doing it. I see more men embraced it more. But and I haven't examination to do those. And I got my daughters would jump in there with me. And I would sit in the ice bath for 30 minutes. You know, I was one of those guys just kind of zen out. And it was funny because. I get out of that thing, and for a 30-minute exposure to a pretty cold ice bath, I don't know the temperature, there's much ice cube for it, and also it's decently cold. And you get out, and you're shivering, and obviously you're generating a bunch of calories, you're burning a bunch of calories for shivering, but at the same time, you're euphoric. I mean, it was just like this profound sense of euphoria with that long of an exposure. It was almost like you're on a drug. You know, my daughter, they were in there like for 5 minutes, as long as me, I didn't know as long as me, but we were all just laughing. We couldn't stop. It was just like, it was like a surreal, like, yeah. We all been getting laughing gas. It was just hilarious. But I mean, they're tougher kids because of doing some of those things. And, again, they're not likely to get hurt. I mean, you stick a kid in an ice bath, I mean, nothing can happen to them. I mean, they're going to be cold. It's going to suck. And they want to do it. I mean, most kids, they want it. They want to try it. It's particularly, and this is the other thing that's so important, be the example, because you can talk to the blue in the face, and we all know what it's like, hypocrites. You know, why don't you do that? Right? You've got to provide a strong example for the man, woman, whatever you are. You've got to get out there. And if you want your child to act a certain way or be a certain way, you can't control all of that. But if you want to give them a good role model, it can't be just all talk. It's got to be action. So if you're eating a garbage diet and you're telling your kid not to eat it, they're not going to care about it. If they don't see you exercising, they're not going to exercise. If they don't see you, if they see you freaking out every time some adversity occurs, then they're going to, I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, damn, I'm a lot like my dad. And I'm like, good or bad. Sometimes you hate it, but I want to be like my dad. So you ultimately, you kind of are. And, my dad was a very stoic guy. I mean, he was a hard working dude. He worked until basically the day he died. And I mean, he was quiet. He really imparted a sense of work ethic in me. And that's really, I think, what I got from my dad. It's just, it didn't really reward him in any way. He was a mechanic and he was an electrician and, never was particularly successful. But I mean, that's what he did. And, I think it's, whether that's good or bad, I think it is. That's my personal belief on that, is not being afraid of hard work. Now, there's, like I said, when we talk about being successful in career and life, sometimes there's that work smarter, not harder type of thing. But I mean, it never hurts you to have a good work ethic. I don't think it can be that. I don't think it can be that. From how you use it and employ it, different impact.
Yeah. I do think people are definitely born with a lot of that, right? I think their methylation status for me, it plays a lot of that. There's just some of us who are competitive, we're hardworking, we're very driven. We like that, other people way more laid back, has it, that whole thing, but can certainly be influenced by what you're definitely the nurture environment of that, of what are the parents doing and what are the expectations that, you can have it be said. My mother was a hardworking kind of, there was no tolerance for, she didn't need to say it, but we got it, like the house better be ship-shape clean, things better be happening by the time I get home. We knew she's out there working three jobs because my father was gone in prison. So she was alone with four kids and she had to do it all. And there was just a natural knowing of, come on, we got to get our chores done. And by the time she's home, she would always cook dinner and she'd always cook breakfast. We had a hot breakfast. I don't know when I had cold cereal. It was kind of like on a Saturday, maybe, watching cartoons, we could have cold cereal. My mother cooked, which is also a thing I see missing with, parents not wanting to cook now. I'm like, it's not that hard to make eggs. I don't know why you're doing Pop-Tarts instead, but that's a big part for me of raising a strong child to be a healthy adult. I don't know how you can have a balanced brain, or a balanced body if you aren't starting with some basic foundations of these primal things. So definitely agree, but there's been a big shift in the way parents approach things, as opposed to, I don't know how that happened in our generation, Sean, honestly, because I see parents our age choosing, where like pizza is like a normal thing on a Tuesday, Wednesday. It just seems like you can do it all the time, versus that was kind of that rare, special thing when I was a kid, versus every week this goes on now.
Right. I mean, like we mentioned, PE is going from school, living home, may not be going on. I don't know, I've been to high school in a long time. But I mean, it's like, these are basic survival skills. And yeah, you should be teaching your kids to cook. You should be in there mixing up the batters and learning how to flip the eggs when they're 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age. You supervise them so they don't kill themselves. But you're right about the cereal thing. You think about it. And my mom is an awful cook. I'll just put that out there. She's literally 5'1". She weighs about 105 pounds. She's almost 80 years of age. And she always told me she thought food was a waste of money. Don't food such a waste of money. And I'm a 6'5" guy going, what? What
is he talking about?
Right. That's like the only thing that's one of the things I like. I'm like, yeah, I like food. But I mean, I think it's, there was a survey done a few years ago about, the Generation Z, or maybe it was the millennials, were not choosing to eat breakfast cereal anymore. And you think, well, that's kind of good. But the reason was because it was too much work to do what? Breakfast cereal. Because it's too much work because you had to actually rinse a bowl. You had to actually pour milk.
Oh my God.
So they want something, they want a package they can rip open, throw away, and pop it in their mouth. So a little bar or something like that. So that's literally was the main reason why breakfast cereal was coming down to that group. And so, but you're right.
I'm sad. I didn't know it was that bad, Sean. I'm going to need a,
yeah, it is.
Need a second.
It's getting bad. Yeah, cereal sales are down. And that's one of the reasons, because, you know, you have the breakfast bars instead, which like the bar a dish, and you don't need to, you know, you don't need to, I don't know, you take the time to eat. You can walk out the door and eat it. And so we've gone to this convenience thing. And part of the, you know, part of the family dynamic is, you know, we're always on the go, eating fast food, eating pizza. You lose some of that relationship stuff. And you know, some good time here in the kitchen. And, you know, and I don't, again, this is to a larger picture, but I mean, you know, you look back and you see these family events where the whole family's in there cooking. And it's more than just making food. It's a social, you know, opportunity to interact socially. And maybe there's extended family. And, you know, we've fractured now. We've got one kid lives in Nebraska and one kid's down in Southern California. The other one's in North Carolina, and the parents are in Michigan, and they never see each other except for maybe Christmas. Whereas, you know, generations past, you know, you routinely have, you know, every weekend the whole family would be there. You would have 20 people in the house. And it's, I think it's just a different time. And you said, you know, certain ethnic groups, it's still, yeah, we still see them a lot. You know,
my best friend's Arabic, and up in Detroit, right. I mean, like, right. Everybody just lives in houses all within like four blocks of each other. Right. They're all, my brother's three houses down, my mother's four, right, houses, they're all, right, right there. And then, you know, it's like 87 first cousins come, right, over for lunch, right, on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, my significant other, you know, she's from France, but her family was from Algeria. And so they have a very tight-knit family. So she has seven brothers and sisters, and like 57,000 cousins and, right, nephews and stuff. And I was over there visiting, you know, this is before her mom passed away. And I was in this little town, Roubaix, France. It's a small, little, modest little home, tiny little place. And literally it was Grand Central Station. And, you know, in France, they all kiss you on the cheek. And so I literally would sit there every day kissing like 50 people. And it was, you know, I could see where it could be a little tiring, but at the same time, it was so much fun. You know, it's kind of one of those things where you get those different inputs where, you know, you've got the male figure there, you've got different, you know, you see these examples, and this is your cousin, this is your uncle, whatever, you know, and this is what he does. And so you get those kind of, I guess, role models, so to speak. Because I know the initial technologist was talking about, you know, providing guidance for young men, you know, as they navigate this world. And I don't, you know, again, I don't know all the issues that we're facing. I see some of that tangentially. We see all the headlines, you know, the different things that people are talking about. Some of it's nuts and some of it's not. But I think, you know, when I talk to most people, they tend to be more sane than when I see, you know, real world versus pretend world, which is kind of the internet stuff. Social media is kind of pretend world. The real world people I see are all kind of like more or less in the same thing, particularly people in our demographic, what is this Generation X, I guess, is what we're in. Is that right? Generation X?
I think, is it, there, are they X or Z? I'm very confused.
You and I. I think
we're Generation X. Oh, we're Generation X, right? Yeah, I think we're Gen X.
I think it started in 1960.
We're like the last normal.
Well, I mean, I'm sure the people from the baby boomers and the greatest generation, they all thought we were crazy. I mean, it's just natural. You think you're Gen X and all that. Society's going to hell, and, you know, God forbid, look at Elvis Presley guy shaking his hips on stage, and now it's like, you know, you can see what's going on today.
We thought Dan Quayle was stupid,
right?
I mean, if Dan Quayle came back today, like an Idiocracy, he'd be a genius.
Yeah, exactly.
We really thought that was the dumbest guy we ever saw.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's obviously, you know, you get different age groups and stuff like that. It's still like, some of these kids got, you know, these very same kids who are doing the stupidest shit that we disagree with are going to be basically saying the exact same thing you and I are saying 20 years later, 30 years later, where it's going to be. It's just how many of them kill themselves in the meantime or do something so incredibly stupid that, you know, right, messes it up for other people. So, I mean, there's, you know, I think, like, there's a concept of something windy, you know, which means it stands the test of time. And you know, that's one reason, you know, meat is, we've been eating meat for 3 million years, whatever, if you believe in creation and we've been eating it for 8,000 years or something like that. It has always been there. It's always been part of our diet. And now we're getting this sort of belief that, oh, well, it's really bad for us. And we need to eat this synthetic sludge, you know, stuff that's going to somehow magically be better for us, which is just, you know, bizarre. Crazy.
Yeah, it's a great con. It's a really good one. But I'm like, I think, wow, well, look how good Nestle was able to con, you know, everybody into thinking human breast milk was bad and this factory stuff in a can is better than what you're actually making. You shouldn't do, you know. So like, I'm amazed sometimes, like, wow, we keep falling for this ridiculousness. And I fell for it. I get it. So, I mean, I not judging because I was there, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, God, we do this. We do this to ourselves. So that's where I'm just trying to ask a bunch of people, hey, what would you do? What is your advice? So as many people can hear this and be like, oh, wow, this orthopedic surgeon guy, this foreign military guy, he's this jacked world champion. He's saying eat a lot of meat. We should feed our kids a lot of meat. So I'm hoping people hear that and go, yeah, oh yeah, the kids should do like physical stuff and we should let them roughhouse. We should let them, you know, learn to fight. You know, Danny Vega, right? Fat Fueled.
Yeah, Danny, I ran into
him. Yeah, at KetoCon, Danny, in his interview, he's like, Stephanie, this is what I think. I was like, what? He goes, there really should be a line when you go to get your license for boys. He says, I don't know if girls need to do this, but definitely boys. If you're going to become a man, like 16 is a good age. They should have a line. Have you been punched in the face? And you've never been punched in the face.
Oh, yeah.
And if you haven't been punched in the face, they need to get punched in the face before they get their license. He's like, you know what I mean? And I was like, yeah. And interestingly enough, I interviewed a good friend of mine who's an Episcopalian priest of 25 years. And that was one of his main takeaways, his big advice, be able to get punched in the face. I went, oh, he goes, oh yeah. Young boys, men need to be able to take a hit, need to know how to shoot it and handle a gun, need to know how to, and he's a small, slight man. He's not physically like dominant like you or anything, but he's spiritually dominant, right? He has a super big strength. And so I was really surprised. Almost every man has said, oh, you need to be able to take a punch in the face. Like, and it just kind of stunned me. Like, oh yeah, right. That really wasn't on my radar for my son. I'm like, oh yeah, you do need to take a punch in the face.
Well, actually. But I mean, you know, like I said, it can be boxing, it can be something else. And I think that's pretty much, I mean, I remember we had this one, when I was in my big surgical residency, we had this one shoulder surgeon. He was talking about, you know, operating on different people. And some people would just, they're crying about every little thing. And he's like, you know, I think we should do a randomized control trial and you walk up and you just smack somebody as hard as you can in the shoulder, punch them in the shoulder, and you see who reacts a certain way, and you put the ones that really overreact here and the ones over here, and then you do surgery on them and see which one has a better outcome. And, you know, his you know, he was just saying people are tough enough, you know, and it's like, yeah, I mean, I get some of that. And, you know, like I said, it's right now, like right, you're offending people. But like, I literally had this is the point. I did an Instagram post the other day, and this is what I said. I said, it was a tweet I put in my Instagram, and it was taken out for hate speech. And what I said was, 70% of Americans are too fucking fat, which is extremely obese, that's what we have. And then the other 95% are left too weak. And that was considered hate speech.
Oh, I remember, I saw it. That was taken down.
Taken down on community guidelines by violation for hate speech. Now shadow ban again.
Is it because of the word fat? Probably.
You know, yeah. I mean, this is ridiculous. But I mean, you think about if you can take a punch in the face, you think somebody really care if somebody says fat or not? I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, right. It's like, you know, we've got some people where words, man, we sticks and stones gonna break my bones, words will never hurt me. I think we need to have a resurgence of that, because all we have is these words and people are like, oh my God, you whatever, you know.
Yeah, everyone's traumatized and needs a safe space.
Traumatized by the words, and it's really, really crazy. And I think, you know, it's like I said, in a controlled environment, yes, you should go out there and learn how to take a punch, you know, whether it's in the face or somewhere else, and learn how to defend yourself and learn how to you know, this is the thing. When I go to jiu-jitsu and people are literally trying to kill me, I mean, this is the goal. Jiu-jitsu, you want to strangle somebody so that you continue to kill that person dead. And that is stressful, believe it or not, when somebody's out there trying to literally strangle you to death. You know, again, they realize you're tapping and stuff. But I mean, the goal, I mean, the physiology is sort of saying, I have a person attempting to kill me right now. That's stressful. So the rest of life is like, don't try to kill me right now. Damn, yeah. It's like, you can deal with those things. So I think that's why it's so important to learn perspective. And so you have people that, you know, some emoji of things or some phrase of things, and they're like, well, man, what good are you? You're kind of useless. You know, if I can't even rely on you, or you might get offended and have to crawl away into a safe space, I'm not going to trust you or anything valuable or important, you know, if I got to deal with you, because you can't even deal with words. So yes, right. Some of those things are important.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've taken up a ton of your time and I really, really appreciate it. Is there any, like, I don't know, last words or advice or anything you have on this topic? Again, it's, you are raising a couple boys. You also have, you know, daughters, you know, it's like, it's just a fascinating time. And I'm grateful I grew up when there weren't any cell phones and there wasn't any social media and there wasn't people identifying as cats. I mean, this is a very bizarre, my yeah. son has to navigate a lot of stuff yeah. that I did not.
Yeah.
You know, I played King on the Hill
right.
and I was praised by lunch moms for throwing kids down. Like, oh, look at how tough, you know what I mean? Like now it's, right. he got in trouble because he talked about eating meat and a vegan girl in his class cried. And he actually got in trouble. I said, he got what? I said, no. He's not in trouble because he's eating his meat in front of that. I'm not having this. So I had to come and defend him. Like, I don't, that's not his problem that she can't handle it.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? This is really, I just go, oh, wow, it's different now. And I'm not sitting around wanting it to harken back to some old days per se of the 1950s or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, I'm not trying to do that, but I'm just, you know, I teach I think there should be less social media. I don't think kids should have accounts. I don't think kids should have cell phones. I think there should be TVs in homes. I have a very strong stance on all that stuff. That and these are things that I tell my patients, right? So I want to know for you, it's like, all right, as this big strapping man who was military and a surgeon, what do you see? Like, okay, this is important. You know, I know there's a lot of kids right now going to medical school, like they call them kids. They're having problems with surgeons because their hands are too weak. Jeez. They don't have the strength to like actually operate and sew up and stuff. They're fine. Yeah.
I haven't heard that. That's amazing. I wouldn't be surprised. Same in the military, because you can't even find enough people to just man a military. You know, I take that. I mean, while I don't disagree with you, social media can be absolutely toxic and is causing some problems. I don't think we're going to be able to successfully, you know, I think, you know, are you going to be able to successfully have your kid never use social media? Or probably not. It's probably not realistic. And so I think you have to sort of, you know, it can be good. I mean, there's like what you and I do, I would argue, is we're using social media for good. We're trying to inspire people. We're trying to improve society. And I mean, I think there's, you know, I think you just have to, you know, it's just like anything. This can be a tool for good. It can be a tool for a waste of time. It can suck the life out of you, and show them, you know, how they can do this in a way that is going to benefit their life, because it's not going to be, I mean, we're not going to wake up tomorrow and all the cell phones are going to be gone. That's never going to happen. You know, God, we're probably going to get these neural implants, you know, if some people are out of their way. And so we got to figure out how to be able to realistically incorporate this stuff in your lives in a way that's not going to be destructive, because it can be. I see kids all the time, and they all they do is spend 6 hour a day looking at TikTok videos, and obviously that is, you know, you've got to like I said, if mom's doing that, guess what kid's going to be doing,
right? And so, I know grown men doing that. That's
right, sure. And you know, and I, you know, like I said, I spend a decent amount on social media because it's part of what I do for a career at this point. But I mean, at some point you have to say, well, let's not make it an option. You know, if I'm out there hiking on the trail with my kid, guess what he's not doing? You know, sometimes you have to do parent-directed activities where you're like, hey, good, We're gonna go work out. We're gonna go learn something about the real world. We're gonna learn how to fire weapons. We're gonna do this. And I guarantee you, kids are gonna have more fun than that anyway. I mean, you know, you look at like from a behavioral standpoint, how many kids do you see that are just joyous and happy to, oh, I'm gonna stare at my phone for the next 6 hours? Nobody wants to do that. It's almost like a drug type of thing. So you have to sort of say, why are you doing this? Because I mean, a lot of what we do is scalable through internet, and some of people make livings on that, and that's a viable option for some people. But I think you got to put it into perspective of letting them know this can be a very dangerous. It's like alcohol, you know, right? I mean, some people enjoy alcohol, and some people are alcoholics, and you've got to figure out how to prevent them becoming, you know, social media holics versus someone who uses social media responsibly. But you know, like I said, I think forbidding it and banning it is going to be a challenge, because you know, you're always going to be, you know, seeking it. Maybe it's like, hey, this is what I want you to do with this, and be direct and say, hey, look, why don't you, if you want to create an account, why don't you, what do you want to focus on? Let's just towards something positive rather than just staring at some, you know, I get it, I mean, all the chicks in there with their ass hanging out, and it's going through your screen. Oh, it's pretty interesting. You know, it's just kind of like, you know, all this stuff, you know, whatever, the guy with his shirt off, or whatever, you know, it's just all this stuff that constantly being bombarded with. And how to sort of say, that's just, you know, kind of nonsense and stuff. And, you know, how do we use it to our favor, to our advantage, without destroying who we are and what we're going to be and still being physical human beings? Because I think, and this is one of the problems, again, this goes back to, you know, we've got this stuff that's going to be the metaverse and the Zuckerberg, and we're going to sit there in VR classes all day and pretend we're some avatar superhero. And we've got this great magical powers in virtual reality world, but in real life, we're kind of a blob. You know, we're impotent, we're weak, we're kind of to be pitied more or less, and life sucks so bad for us. But I know I can go to, you know, metaverse and be this super handsome, thick, robust superhero person. And the reason they're doing that is because they feel so crappy in real life. And so if you can make them not crappy in real life, you know, good diet, good healthy, you know, healthy activity patterns, then you'll have less likelihood that they'll be these, you know, people that are addicted to social media 24/7. But it, you're right, it is an ongoing and worsening problem. You know, it's like, you know, you give your kid a phone for good, you know, for reasons. Oh, they need a phone, they need to contact me, there's an agency, and all of a sudden you find them spending all day on this nonsense. And you can't even have a meal with them because they won't put their own phone down. You know, it's a challenge. But I mean, you just have to, you know, like I said, I mean, you're still the parent at some point. You know, at some point they're gonna leave the house, and then you know, you think about it, you've got a finite amount of time where you can have a serious influence on your kids. And then after that, you know, you leave the role of parent. Now you're kind of like a consultant at some point.
Yeah. As I tell people, like, I had full control until right. 12.
Right.
I'm telling you, I still was up, but sixth grade was like a whole nother where I had to go, well,
yeah,
you know what? You know, it was one of those moments of trying new foods and trying new things. You know, I'm like, okay, baby, it is, you know, so he learned stuff and he was like, oh, I'm like, yeah, that's not, you've never eaten that before. Well, my stomach hurts now. I'm like, yeah, because you ate mac and cheese. You never had that before. You've never eaten dairy. So, welcome, you know, or whatever, right? Like, it's really interesting. My son now, I teach him about sucralose and ACE-K. And he's looking at whey powders because he wants to lift weights and get jacked, right? So he's having to read, and you teach him different things. Like, yep, that's a poison. And he's like, it's in everything. I said, yes, that's why you don't buy that crap at that store. You need to get it over here or whatever. And it is a different thing. And I've got like 2 more years, and then I will just be a consultant.
And it's you know, like I said, it's good that, you know, the mac and cheese experiment, because, you know, it's, you know, depending on what it is, and some of the powdery cheese product garbage. There's some mac and cheeses which are horrible and some that are worse than horrible, I think most. But I mean, you know, at least you're able to tie in and say, you ate this and this is how you felt. So they have this, maybe they have this conditioned flavor aversion. They're like, you know, like an animal that eats something that poisons them, they realize for the rest of their life, I'm not eating that because I got really, really sick. Yeah. On that. So it's a good experience to sometimes say, hey, see, okay, so this is what happened. What happened to you? Okay, I felt like garbage. You like the garbage? Well, not really. Maybe you shouldn't do that again. And you know, sometimes I work, sometimes I did. Some people are going wrong. I don't know if you're on beverage case. Or anything. Yeah, you kind of get it growing up. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
All right, this has been fun.
Yeah, it has. Thank you so much. Let's talk about anything. What's new coming up for you? So tell them where to find you.
I mean, you know, assuming I'm not banned or kicked off on social media, I'm Sean Baker 1967 on Instagram, SHAWNBAKER1967. YouTube channel, Sean Baker MD, Twitter, S Baker MD, and then TikTok. Sean McCundy.
You're on TikTok too, man. You are killing it. It's
like, yeah, well, it's, you know, I'm slowly ramping that one up. TikTok is a very particularly
cesspool, I think. I have avoided it. Yeah.
Particularly cesspool. So it really is. It really is. It's really, really bizarre stuff on that one. But you know, I'm obviously the company Rivera. We raised $5 million for our seed round, and so we are offering money, hiring people, and starting to ramp up that. So it'll be kind of an alternative healthcare platform where we're focusing on actually getting people off meds and treating root cause and doing everything it takes, whether it's nutrition, lifestyle, sleep, exercise, all those types of things, providing the support, providing the infrastructure, providing physicians that actually get it.
Yeah,
as part of that, so that's coming up.
Your newest, biggest thing that's going on, right?
Yeah, that's been in the works for a while, but it's starting to, like I said, as we made this big sort of, the raise all the funding for that, so that's really propelled that quite a ways. And so I got a lot of travel I got to do. Starting to do, as COVID has cleared out more or less. I mean, I think I'm just like we're still playing that. I see people running around with their masks on and stuff. I just kind of laugh, but. I'm traveling a bit more, speaking at a few more conferences, I'm starting to get that stuff starting to wrap back up. I had 8 international conferences scheduled for 2020. That's like in Sweden and Hungary and Germany and South Africa and Brazil, and they all got canceled. So it's kind of fun to them. But I'll be doing quite a bit of traveling this year, and so trying to figure out how to stay in shape and, trying to all that type of stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. And we'll make sure everything's in the description, for you guys. He's got a super informative YouTube. Instagram is a lot of kind of funny sometimes. You're a balance of informative, smart ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Brief. YouTube, though, it's incredible. You break down the research and you bring a very unique perspective. From your history, and then sometimes it's just you working out, and for all the ladies and some of the men, I mean, it's really fun eye candy to watch him just throw heavy balls around and jump at things. I don't even know what you're doing half the time. You're a beast. I've pulled you up for my son, by the way, because he wants to be jacked. We go to the gym together all the time. My son is literally practically killing me right now, Sean. Yeah, he's killing me though. He's like, come on, mom, you can do more. I'm like, dear God, I'm 40. I have to be like, honey, I'm not trying to pull it, but I am a 49-year-old woman with some low testosterone. I said, you're going to have to give me a second. I don't need to work out like you. I got cortisol issues. And he was like, what are you talking about? I said, fine. The other day, because he's like, you're not doing enough. I go, okay, let me just show one time. He goes, what? I go, okay, move the thing on the legs. How much did you do? And I forget what he told me, 250. I said, okay, watch that. And at 300, I said, watch. He goes, oh my God, you're strong. I said, yes, but I'm not trying to, I can't keep doing that. I'm not trying to be jacked, actually. He's so cute. I said, I've already been through this, honey. I'm not you. So just let me do what I'm doing. But he loves it. And so I really, that example of do things that they, show them. Yeah. And he will have to say at this age for me and my boy, older, if any people listening, the older kids, finding what they like and meeting them there. Like, he's super into wanting to go to the gym right now. Physicality is incredibly important. Looking good is incredibly important. And so I'm with him. He loves me working out with him. And he goes, mom, you should just fire your trainer. I can train you. I'm like, oh man, pumpkin. I don't know about that, but okay. And I'm dying, Sean. I'm exhausted, but it's so fun. And I have to connect with him at this age. It's very different than at 6. Right? It wasn't hard at 6 for me, And so I hope parents hear that, because it really is important to kind of, like, it's hard, It's hard for me to try to go to the gym as much as he wants, but I'd rather be a little tired. And honestly, and I pace myself. I just say, I'm going to do baby weight. He's like, okay. And he'd rather me do baby weight and do three sets with him than leave. He hates when I go. And I'm like, well, can I just go over there and like get a massage? He's like, no. So
good for you. Good for him. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is good.
It's kind of tough when you get older and you think your kids are going to surpass you. So I'm such a fan.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hold on off as long as possible.
You do. And that's competition's good. We play basketball. He plays the basketball team. I play college ball and we play out here and we keep going one-on-one recently. And I still beat him. I was like, and I mean, I about died. And it was, I did it. I said, and I'm waiting. I'm like, I'm cool with when he's going to beat me. I'm like, you think you got it? Let's go.
Yeah.
And it's fun and it kind of keeps him a little bit like, you know, I said, honey, I know how to box out. I'm real big. Actually, I play like I'm 6'4". So let's that's what I tell him. I said, girls know how to move. Yeah. Trust me. I will play. You'll be surprised. I don't need to be that strong, but I am that strong, you know? So yeah, you're right. So parents, play with your kids more, make it be physical. I love it. Take them hiking, put the phones down. Throw that whole throwing medicine balls with the little, I was like, what? I don't think women would ever really think of that, Sean. That was like kind of mind blowing for me. I'm like, I didn't know to do that. I regret it now, you know, like what a cool thing to do with little kids.
Yeah, we play catch. I'm going to catch this. Can we get to 50 with a little 4-pound ball? And yeah, for a little 4-year-old, 5-year-old kid, it's a lot.
It is. It's amazing. I do it with autism. I do it with my families. We call it heavy work. We do it for occupational therapy for sensory issues. But I didn't think about just doing it for everybody. I love it. It's one of my favorite takeaways, actually. I hope parents really pick that up and start doing some real physical training, even with little kids. Yeah, I think that was a really, really nice thought that I don't think women would think to do, to be honest. So, yeah. Awesome, Sean. Have a beautiful rest of the day. I appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Keep doing what you're doing, Stephanie. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay. Appreciate it. Bye.